Am I still the person?
Yep, you are still the person.
Okay, welcome to the meeting. Let's do a roll call for this Wednesday, August 20th, 6 p.m. meeting.
Kevin Lewis, Nye Beach business owner.
Jason Malloy, police chief.
Chris Bay, city engineer.
Derek Tokos, community development.
Robert Eamon, city council liaison.
Lisa Eamon, Nye Beach resident.
Doris Posner, Nye Beach resident. Janelle Goplin, neighbor, Bayfront business owner. And online?
He keeps freezing and
we just lost our quorum.
Quick, get him on the phone. We saw him. Hopefully he didn't think that when you said we have a quorum, he's like, oh, cool.
No, he froze before.
Oh, okay.
Because you made the quorum.
Oh. Can we keep going or no? We have to go.
No, I can't take action on that.
Okay.
Minutes until.
What's your? My husband and I have clear water on the beach.
Oh,
and then
that's
my barge tap. Okay.
Yeah. Paper.
Oh.
When the doors are
open. When the what?
Doors.
When the what?
Doors.
Oh, oh yeah.
I'm a winter supporter.
Yeah. Yeah. The joke on my beach is I always tell Gabby Stephanie, if I find parking, I'll pump in for lunch. It's actually not that bad.
No.
I mean, parking's not...
It hasn't been bad.
Yeah, I don't feel like it's been that bad.
Do you think the meters have made the turnover better? Because it feels better to me than it was like a year ago or something beforehand.
I think it totally has.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, dang it.
Right, Phil and it's on.
Don't
go ahead. And Aaron's just coming on.
Phil, we're doing roll call. Can you announce yourself?
Yep, Bill Brannigan.
Perfect. Oh, Aaron popped off again.
Aaron.
Oh, we're still in roll call, Aaron.
He was outside, then he went inside.
Well,
Aaron Bretzky, Porter Newport.
Perfect. Okay, and approval of minutes. Did everybody have an opportunity to look at the minutes? And does anyone have anything for the minutes?
I second it.
Okay. All those in favor of passing the minutes? Aye. All opposed? Okay. Nay. There are none. So. And we'll move on to the agenda.
All right. Derek Tokos, Community Development. First time on the agenda, we have a review of the preliminary plans for a package of Bayfront sidewalk improvement projects that we discussed in concept in previous meeting. I have with me Chris Meadie, our engineer, who will kind of walk through the different items. I'm going to go ahead and bring it up for screen share. Okay. So, Chris, do you want to kind of start walking through it, or can I can just kind of tab along?
Yeah, just the cover sheet for the project, the plans that we'll be sending out for bid once we finalize them. We've got the cover sheet, a blank sheet as of now. This sheet is kind of a kind of shows the general layout of where these things are in a broader view on Bay Boulevard. Go ahead, Derek.
Dick.
And G4 kind of shows a little bit more close up of where exactly each improvement would take place. And that continues through T6. And there's 20 repair locations that we've identified at this point. Now, that doesn't mean that it's set in stone that these 20 places. There could be more, there could be less, depending on what Derek and you guys think about the proposed improvements. So we'll go through C1 here. And you can see pretty basic stuff here. There's sidewalk missing, hadn't been replaced, been removed for some reason. One of them looks like a utility, new hydrant or reconnection to hydrant, and a bare spot over by the dock. So those will just be infilled with sidewalk, pretty simple. my chief Derek. And here we got a driveway, a large driveway on the left-hand side of 813 Southwest Bay Boulevard. And you can see the garage is only a portion of the size of the driveway. So we'd like to narrow that driveway down to provide access to the garage still, but then put full height curb and sidewalk in front of the door and moving to the east to where you match it to where the existing driveway would be removed. And feel free to ask me any questions.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I guess I didn't bring my glasses. I'm looking at this. So you're saying that the driveway to the garage stays the same? Say that one more.
No, the existing driveway goes clear from the east side of the building. You can kind of see to where the garage
is. Okay, gotcha.
Is.
Okay,
so we're going to narrow that driveway.
Okay.
It used to be years ago.
I see. Okay,
yeah. And then it'll be raised up. Level curb or level sidewalk for a longer stretch.
Okay.
And the same thing here on the right hand side, 769 Bay Boulevard. There's a driveway approach that goes into definitely a wall of the building, so we don't feel that driveway would be needed for any kind of loading or unloading. So we'd like to propose to remove that. Same thing here at 746. As you can see, there's a garage in the background that may have been used at some point, and it's blocked by outdoor seating now. So we're going to propose to remove that driveway with some approval from the property owner. 701 Southwest Bay Boulevard there at the bottom. That's an existing water meter, large water meter for a fish plant, and it's a vault. So it's raised for some reason, or the sidewalk is lowered probably. And so there's a tripping hazard on each side of it, or actually on three sides of it. So what we'll do is remove a panel on each side of that vault, and probably the curb inside the curb itself, and pour a taller curb to match it on that curb side, and then kind of wrap up to the top of the ball so we get a nice flat surface.
About half an inch or something?
Yeah, yep.
So you just sort of slow.
Yeah, you can see the limits of how we take it out and then taper a panel like 5 feet up to that. Mm-hmm. Instead of grinding it down, that would be the other option, which isn't as desired. Well, if you don't have money to do it, that would be the fix, is grind it. But we feel like it would be a better finished product if we took out the panel and did it that way.
Do it properly.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And again, okay, on 669 Southwest Bay Boulevard, we got the same condition, same type, and both these on 617 and 669 Bay Boulevard. Same issue with the existing water vault, or water meter, actually, that we need to replace panels on both sides to bring in a nice transition up to the top. All right, 444. You can see there's a driveway there, and it leads to the entrance of a store. It's not being used, so-called, as a driveway, but it could be used as a loading ramp. So we'd have to coordinate with Oceanic Guards to make sure that to determine what the use of that thing is, and if they need a driveway.
Sure. If it was a loading ramp, could you change it just to a handicap accessible size ramp? Or would that be worth doing to make
it? We probably wouldn't want to do that because it's mid-block and not an intersection. It's not really a proper crossing. We know people cross down there pretty much wherever they want, but we wouldn't want to encourage that.
Okay.
So our proposal would be to remove it and replace it with full-length curb.
Right.
So you'd do the same thing for the candy shop. You'd ask them if they use that as a loading?
Oh, sorry. I skipped over that.
Okay.
Exactly the same. Yeah.
Okay.
So when you talk to them, will you just make a portion of it loading, but then part of it would turn into parking?
I think that is a potential. We'd have to discuss that to paint the curb green.
They're already striped as parking in front of them.
Yeah,
they are.
Right, but
it's not an actual loading zone.
Right, but I'm just saying if they say they need it.
Well, we would consider it. But if they have, you know, obviously they got materials or goods coming into these stores, and they probably have hand trucks and stuff that they have
coming
up. They might desire to have that ramp there, but we'd have to discuss that and come to some kind of agreement with them. Is that right, Jerry?
Mm-hmm.
$415.
These are the bad panels.
Yeah, these are panels that have a lip. You can't really see it on here, but they're a big trip hazard. It's more like an inch lip. And we've been notified there's a food cart there on the west side of this picture, usually. And they've noticed when Derek and I were walking the corridor, they mentioned to us that they've seen several people trip and fall there while they're in their food truck. $411, there's a large driveway there. It used to probably have a purpose. Right now, it currently doesn't. And we don't know what's going to happen with that site. So we're going to propose to take that driveway out and replace it with full height and curb and sidewalk.
And then regain that as parking.
Yes.
It's marked as yellow right now.
It is. Yeah, and you could probably, I don't know the exact dimensions right off the top of my head, but you might be able to get a couple of parking spots.
Right now, is that one of the loading zones?
The curb is not painted green. To the left hand of that picture, it is.
Yeah.
There's one starts, if the loading zone basically starts.
But the yellow is regular. What does the yellow mean?
That means no parking.
No parking.
No parking.
Yeah.
Do we know who owns that property?
Sure. You mean the dilapidated dock?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Pacific Seafood.
Oh, okay.
They picked it up from Hallmark, California Shellfish. And I'm not aware of any. I know they would like to redevelop that dock section, but the cost is pretty substantial. And they have, over the years, tried to come up with some sort of public-private partnership, try to leverage economic development funds at the federal level, and have been unsuccessful. So there's no redevelopment that's imminent on that property.
Okay.
Yeah, so we would propose to remove it for now. Development does come in, they would have to do some improvements to make access
right.
to their site. These two here, 404, 367, got a couple of ADA ramps that are non-ADA compliant, and so we'd like to take the opportunity to correct those while we have an opportunity. 156, again, a driveway that may have in the past had a purpose, but now it's with the repurposing of the outdoor seating, it doesn't appear to be the driveway needs to be needed. Again, they can, back to some of those entryways, they may desire to have some kind of loading area.
But technically, like that location specifically, so that cafe, the parking on the other side of that cafe is the city's parking, and that's the lot.
Right.
Is this actually their parking?
It was originally their parking and driveway, but we've made changes to our code that such that they really don't have to maintain that as parking. And I do think we want to get away from a situation where, they're constantly putting, that cone effectively out there.
Right.
We could recover a parking space there. And so we'll talk to them because I haven't seen them utilize that for parking for a number of years at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the only thing I've seen is that they, when they replace their coolers and stuff, they use that to get into that back door to their kitchen.
So they would, tear down the tents or pop-up tents, it looks like?
Let me ask you this, Chris. Is there any reason why they just couldn't mount a curb at that point? I mean, if it's used that infrequently?
So we put
a vertical curb in there, and it's a typical sidewalk, and they just drive over the top of it to get in there.
You'd build up with like one 2x4, two 2x4s on the curb, so
right.
a little bit of a ramp. You've
right.
seen it around
yeah.
now, probably some places.
Right.
So yes, definitely. And in all these cases where we're in, where
right.
there could be an entryway, we could use that technique. Now the bottom one, 146, pretty obvious. There's not going to be anybody driving there, driving in that driveway. Go right into the wall. This is a bigger picture, and Derek can help me out with this. This is a parking lot, gravel lot, owned by the port. You know, as you can see, it's got a driveway width of 105 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the problems is, you know, the large trucks park in there, and then people try to park along that curb and block those people in there sometimes. And it's just not a well-functioning lot for safety and for pedestrians using that sidewalk or for people parking and perhaps blocking people in there. So we've come up with a proposed diagram right above the picture, right above the bottom picture, that would show a driveway going in, so you'd have a through and then out. It's just a term, you know, and then you could use the space in between those driveways to recapture some parking that wouldn't compromise the function of the parking lot. Now, the only caveat to this is to meet our parking standards, which is in that table above, which would be 45-degree parking.
Mm-hmm.
We need an 18.5-foot stall depth, which is, you can see on the drawing, and then a 13-foot travelway, one-way travel. So that allows people to pull in, pull out, and get, you know, without technically without going onto the sidewalk, but that could be an issue with larger trucks. So that's our proposal. We got a lot of legwork to do with the property owners.
Well, and the one thing I wanted, Aaron, can you chime in and share with folks kind of what the port's relationship is with that owner and what you guys see near and say maybe mid to long term in terms of the port's interest at that location?
Sure, we have a lease with the property owner. It's a dollar lease, so we're primarily leasing it because we have agreed to maintain. We cut the brush on that hillside a time or two each year, and so we don't own the property, which is why the port's never done anything with it. I don't know that they're looking to. I don't know that they're looking to sell it to us, nor does the port really want to buy it. It just kind of stays as it is currently. We've got so many other projects that are a lot higher priority that paving that lot has never really been something, because we don't own it anyway. So paving it on behalf of the owners for us would not be something that we would do, I think.
And Aaron, that is or isn't the same, it doesn't have a relationship with the port.com does above it?
That's who owns it, yeah. Yeah, that's whoever, I can't remember the name of the fellow who owns it, but yeah, he owns that whole, that's all part of the same property, I believe.
Yeah, I looked at the owners and they were different, but I didn't dig deeper. There may be a reason why they have them under different names. What's the term of the port's lease?
I couldn't tell you off the top of my head right as I sit here. I did just talk to him, I think it was last year about it, I don't know off the top of my head when it expires. I have to look that up and get back to you.
That'd be helpful. I guess what we were kicking it around, if you're looking at a lease term of at least 10 years, then I think it's reasonable for us to look at doing some minimal improvements to that property for parking purposes. But if it's like year to year,
yeah, I think
that's really not doable.
Well, there are a couple complications with.
Yeah, this. It's not year to year, still, right?
Yeah.
Can you guys still hear me? Did you cut out?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Yeah, we can hear you. Now we can.
I was just going to say that the reason why the port has it is because I think years ago they agreed to
you're breaking up, Aaron.
For commercial fishing. Even what we charge and what it takes to enforce on that lot, it doesn't make a lot of sense for us to stay there. But that's I don't know what we're gonna do in the future.
I guess our thought again, we'll double back with Aaron and I'll talk to him over a line that's not breaking up. And if it looks like if the port and that owner are going to be involved in a parking relationship long term, 10 plus years. But we think it's reasonable to include some improvement here because it would significantly improve traffic flow and safety.
Yeah. But it sounds
and its
like
cost is not astronomical. But if it's all going to be in flux, it's hard for us to justify that kind of amount. That's kind of where we're at.
And I'll go back to a couple of the complications with this. Is we've got, if you see that box up in the center top,
mm-hmm.
so space available. We've got 26 feet from the back of the sidewalk to the toe of that slope. And to meet our parking standards, we'd need 31.5. So we would have to cut 5 feet, 5.5 feet into that hill and create a retaining wall, maybe 3 feet tall. Nothing, but it's supporting the hill and, you know, the apartments or condos are up there. So, you know, it'd be, and paving it, if we paved it, we have an issue with the runoff from a private lot coming over the sidewalk,
right.
unless we controlled it on site somehow with a trench drain or something like that.
Yeah.
So there are some issues that we'd have to, or some hurdles we'd have to get over, but and it might require some geotechnical work before we put in a wall on the toe of the slope. So there's some issues.
But we do. We may have some geogrid blocks that from our
right.
projects that we could use here, so we wouldn't be necessarily
paying extra.
Yeah. There could be those bigger blocks, 2.5 feet tall by 5 feet wide. Just put a layer of those, and that might do it.
Yeah.
Hey, if the city is going to fix that lot and pave it, would that be exclusively used by the port like it now is, or would that suddenly become public parking?
We weren't viewing it as trying to convert it to public parking. It does serve a valuable purpose in terms of providing some parking for commercial fishing purposes. I think our principal perspective here has been trying to improve the safety at this location. We would pick up probably three parallel parking spaces that we don't have right now because it's such an open frontage.
So that's kind of our benefit.
That's our benefit.
Yeah.
But you're not actually
paving their lot.
No, he said that if they thought they were going to use it for another 10 years, then it would be
viable to do it. Because it's not, in the scheme of things, that's not a huge expense. And the benefit of, you know, better, safer pedestrian movement, we pick up a few parallel spaces, it functions a whole lot better if that's what it's going to be long term. And the port's into it for $1 a year long term for commercial fishing.
Right, and that takes them out of the other places too.
Mm-hmm. That keeps them off the
I was just saying, like, you know, as an owner, you'd be like, yeah, great. Someone wants to pay my lot. I want to pay for it.
Yeah, but that's all. Yeah, but if they're into a long term lease with the port for $1 a year, how much are they really gaining off of that?
Well, if it's a write off.
Yeah, but if it's not long term, they can say, thanks for paving it. Now I'm going to turn it into my own parking area.
Yeah.
Which is why we'll.
So you have to have a good.
But as far as paving, I think their benefit is we maintain that hillside for them, and they call us when they're not happy with it. So that's the bulk of what they get out. Plus, it protects their view. They don't want somebody building something
right.
that's going to obscure the view.
Right.
So
okay.
I'd be willing to.
But somebody had a question or comment about the paving of it. To improve safety, too, pedestrian safety, too, gravel gets spewed all over the sidewalk because they're backing in and backing out, you know. So that would be one benefit of paving it. Uh, 106, again, really wide driveway. It really doesn't serve a purpose. This is next to the lot where the, you know, potential parking would be. So this is just reducing the width of the driveway, similar to the other ones. 103, similar situation. Once upon a time, that might have been a garage. We don't know what they're using it for. I
don't know if Derek does, but we'd have to have discussions with them about what the use of that is. But our proposal would be to remove it and replace it. This is awfully well, I don't know the address, but just it's in between. You guys know where it's at, I'm sure.
It's right by Locomotion.
Yeah. Really wide driveway, which is, it's, you know, functions as three driveways, basically. But it's really, the cross slope of it is really steep. As you can see, there's some grades to make up, so that's why it's... Oh, you don't have it?
Yeah,
I'm not there. Oh, I want this
in there.
All right,
there.
You see on the picture up there, it's serves as like three driveways.
Oh, yeah.
It's one, but it's one opening. So, but it, the driveway itself is broken. It goes up steep for a couple feet and then flattens out a little bit to make up some grade to get up that hill. And there's scarring on the asphalt for people dragging and stuff. So what we'd propose is to level that driveway, the concrete driveway approach down and do a transition back into that drive, those driveways.
And
to make up grade.
Where that white car is, that's their driveway where the greenhouse is?
Yes.
Okay, so that's their actual driveway. Okay.
Yes.
And I'm assuming there's several parking areas. There's a parking area up above. I would bet up there.
So, well, I'm confused. What are you doing on this one?
What would be replacing it?
Fix the driveway.
The sideway.
Right now, that sidewalk is not ADA compliant. It's you've got about maybe 3 feet.
Yeah.
And then it dives off
right. Pretty
steeply down to Bay Boulevard, and very awkward to walk on. If you walked over there, pretty easy for somebody to turn an ankle because you don't anticipate that kind of an arrangement when you're walking on a sidewalk.
And again, cars have a hard time navigating, especially if there's bigger trucks. They'll drag, or cars will drag on the asphalt. So you can actually see the scarring on the asphalt from trailer hitches or backs of cars.
And the concrete,
yeah. So that would be the proposal on that one. And that is the extent of the 20 proposed fixes that we have at this point. We did identify another one towards Fogarty, a drainage issue where there's a ditch that runs behind some houses by our public parking area up there and crosses. Goes over the sidewalk and across the road to the nearest catch basin, and it creates a mossy, you know, mess.
It's this one here, right?
Yes. That made it in there.
Yeah,
it's made it in. But yeah.
Remember the Blake sent me an updated one.
Oh, okay. Okay.
He was cleaning up some stuff.
Yeah.
So we're using the updated one. It's very minor changes.
Right. And that one there, since this is mostly a sidewalk job, we don't want to introduce any storm. You know, it would be putting in an inlet back at that ditch, taking out a panel, running it through the curb so it's not crossing the sidewalk, and then it would flow in the gutter to an inlet. So with the type of work, we think that our crews, city crews, could accomplish this fix. So it could pop back in the package, depending on what public works feels comfortable with doing.
So we, what was the number you were at last on this one? 175?
The latest estimate, and granted, I need to do a final review of all these plans and review the quantity takeoff and unit prices that were used for the estimate, that as of now, it's 175.
So we're within budget right now.
That's a lot of work for 175.
Yeah.
And then how many proposed parking spaces will it gain us?
I haven't calculated that. I would say probably in the neighborhood of 10.
That's very good.
I don't
think maybe 10. Three and that one. This would give it.
It's gonna be scattered around.
Yeah.
Right,
I would say with the elimination of all those driveways, could be up to 10.
So that's the point, is to eliminate the driveways so we have more parking.
I think frankly that's a little bit of a side benefit.
Yeah.
I think the biggest improvement is
safety.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we don't want those kind of trip hazards out there. We don't want issues where people, you know, who are going to, you know, from business to business, you know, are you know, having to navigate this kind of stuff. You know, you don't expect driveways where there's a wall purpose.
Yeah.
And so you're walking along talking to your friend and all of a sudden, oops, you know,
or they're doing this.
Down I go.
I see this.
Yeah,
I'm
gone.
When are you thinking about doing all this?
Go ahead.
We're trying to, you know, we got some other CIP projects, capital improvement,
particularly right now, some paving projects that we're trying to get done before the inclement weather sets in. This is dependent upon, you know, good weather, somewhat good weather. Paving roads is dependent upon precipitation and not having precipitation. And also you need the temperatures to pave. It's got to be above like above 50 to be get a good product out of paving. So we're putting a couple paving projects here in the next week, get those out to bid, and then we'll focus on this. So we're thinking sometime after the peak of summer, somewhere in the off season, but not in the inclement, totally in the inclement weather.
One of the thoughts too we were kicking around is this is sets up as an ideal project where you bid it, but give them a extended window to complete the work. Because these are all little distinct projects. They can mobilize a crew out to knock out one driveway, and then maybe they break away, we get some bad weather, we get a clearing, they come back in and tackle another one. And so it seems like a good project for kind of extended window to perform over the off-season period to just knock them all out.
Yeah, because it seems like a total pain in the butt for all people down there if it was going to be like,
right,
we're
going to
do all of these this month.
No, we put restrictions on how many they can open up at one time. You know, a contractor probably would want to come down and go through each of these and demo them and have gravel there for a long time and then pave or then place concrete all at once. But we would limit the amount of spaces they could cut open, finish up, then move.
So we might be able to provide that, what was it, that was that Fifth Street right away we made available in the past for just stockpiling a little bit of material over the winter. Because that, you know, the one by Fogarty, that unimproved little patch road, parking area has often been used as a staging area for contractors down there. So you've seen a lot of this conceptually. This is now, you know, getting worked into actual construction drawings. That's what you're looking at now so that Chris and his folks can bid the project. So we're making progress.
And the rest of the drawings here, standard details for driveways, sidewalk, and ramps. And
I guess I've missed several meetings because I haven't heard anything about that. You? No, I mean, I'm like, I would never
pay
to talk about
it. We talked about it.
I think it's just one meeting.
It was just one meeting.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I've been into so many cities with cobblestone streets that are uneven, and it's like, you know, at your own risk, just walk.
But one lawsuit for the city could cost millions.
Yeah, we just closed the recreation loophole. Let's not open up another one.
Yeah, that's the problem, right? Well. Okay.
All right, any other questions?
No, that's great.
Great, thank you.
Plus people with wheelchairs and walkers.
Thanks, Chris.
Well, they're all, yeah.
All right. Okay. All right. Next up is a discussion about kind of the baseline we start with at Night Beach. We've talked about, you know, we're going to be firing up outreach for the Night Beach community in October.
Well, can I just say one thing about that last project real quick?
Yeah.
I don't know what funds these are coming from. Mm-hmm. Is this from the parking meters?
It's actually from parking fund, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because we're improving the pedestrian safety and experience.
No, I get that. Yeah.
I mean, it's all part of it. And we pick up a few parking spaces. If we can resolve that lot that the port's leasing, I think that'll help a lot too down there because that's pretty confusing right now.
Okay. I know that.
Hey, Derek?
Yes.
Question. We have an awful lot of trip hazards, so I commend us for fixing all the trip hazards. As have obviously people have fallen. Has the city ever gotten sued or had medical expenses for the falls people have?
We have, but not to my knowledge, anything recently on the Bayfront. Litigation in the city center, in the vicinity of medication station. I know we've had that one out there.
Is that before they found it?
Right.
Related to like the water covers that pop up, people mm-hmm. step in them. A couple of the uneven sidewalks where there's like.
But yeah, I just can't think of anything recent.
No, this is just, this is over the years.
Yeah. The only thing
well, we dodged the bullet.
Huh. Oh, don't say that. I'm just going to put it in there because since we're talking about gravel roads and paving and everything, the school, the road to Yukon View School that is gravel, and the buses go there all day long during the school year, and there's big potholes. That is a very dangerous road for kids to walk home on. And the buses are driving by, the gravel's flying, and if we pave any street in Newport, I know that, you know, that is that street is really, I think, needed.
Okay. I'll jot it down and share that with Chris.
It's a mystery why we have some gravel.
But on the one that the buses are on all day long, yeah, and kids are walking on.
Priority list of streets.
We are.
Yeah. That one
we
definitely
are.
Is a problem.
Yeah. Okay, sorry.
And depending on where they're located, certain funds are available or not. You know, so if it's a near renewal, we can bring some near renewal dollars to play other areas. I know that High Street down by the park in Nine Beach,
oh, yeah,
that one's prioritized, and that's going to happen.
Was that gravel?
That's gravel.
Oh, yeah.
Down there.
Is that the skate park?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's all gravel. It's horrible.
Yeah.
And,
Well,
you
couldn't
view
one. There's two schools there now.
Yeah.
So you've got the private school, the Christian
and
school,
the Christian
and
school.
You couldn't view.
Yeah. We have some other larger ones teed up that we're working on for the spring that are bigger, like 55th up in Agate Beach, which is takes on
quite
a bit.
Have schools on it?
Fogarty, you know, Fogarty, well, talking about schools, Fogarty's in play by the high school. So Fogarty's one that's being worked on too. And
that's
going to be
too. Yeah,
Fogarty's
yeah.
Second, first in Grant. I think that whole package of gravel roads there,
oh, yeah,
sandwiched between the high school
yeah,
and
yeah.
US 20 would
uh-huh.
will get picked up.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
We're,
yeah.
We're working through them.
Okay.
It's good point.
I would just rather spend $170,000 on that than whatever. Okay, sorry.
It is cheap.
Is it?
In retrospect.
Okay.
The challenge we went to is can we get
okay.
away with just paving? And that's the biggie for us. Too many of these, it's not just paving. Now we've got to go in and deal
structure.
With utilities.
Okay.
Either our own or deal, coordinate with others.
Right, okay.
And that's when the price starts going up.
And drainage.
Storm drainage is a big
thing. Yeah. Remember when they redid the street and had to put all the drainage in the
chain.
So I just wanted to kind of just go back over the baseline of Knife Age and if you guys are comfortable with that being a starting point or if you want other things thrown in the mix. I do think that. You guys also saw in your packet the press release that came from State Parks. So,
mm-hmm.
So now basically, you know, I mean South Beach and Beverly Beach, and I believe including the Jetty area and South Beach, those will all be $10 a day for parking. So, so again, you know, we were looking. Our concept was metering the turnaround. And then providing parking permits in the existing 3-hour time limited areas, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. And then there's concept in here for the pricing was going to be the same as what we have on the Bayfront.
Dollar an hour.
Yeah. And we'd be making permits available for transient folks, and then there's some provisions in here to provide complimentary passes for volunteers at the Visual Arts Center. So that was kind of the baseline that we were working with. Oh, then we'd also have a $35 annual fee for those folks that live in the 3-hour time limited areas with a restriction of one permit for each license holder within the household. And those who wanted a commercial permit in the time-limited areas, that was going to be $35 a month or $300 annually, and that would allow them to exceed the existing 3-hour time limits.
Can I ask about the Nye Beach turnaround?
Sure.
This section here where these picnic tables that hardly anybody ever uses, those are spaces, it used to be, a vendor could get $50 and have their space. Can't we recover part of that as parking?
Well, they still are vending.
They are still vending locations.
Yeah.
That are reserved.
I've been down there and we actually sit on those concrete benches every so often.
Right, but no vendors have used those.
Yeah, they have.
They have.
Yeah.
There was a hot dog guy.
There was a kite vendor. There's a kite vendor.
Through.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we could still have a section to have picnic tables, but it just is a lot of wasted space, in my opinion, for parking. Because it is so tight down there.
I wonder if there's enough space to do a second row of...
Well,
I think what you'd end up having to do would be doing some sort of angled-in parking, which, you know, would be what you'd probably end up having.
Yeah, you could have this, and you could still have
this
an area for
way.
The picnic tables.
Are you talking about right here?
Yeah. No, the space down here.
Down by
the
seawall.
Like three picnic tables, and... We used to have more vendors, but it's so windy there. It must be that have signed up. The vendors don't use it as much because of the wind. But, you know, there's a way to maybe get some angled parking there and still have an area for people to sit. And I'm a local. I have sat there, too. But the thing is, that area is so congested with all those stores and restaurants there that, you know, I think they would appreciate having more parking down in that area.
One of the other things to consider is the emergency vehicle access that takes up a lot of room, and so.
But they still have this.
We'd have to make sure the drive aisle is wide enough for them
right.
to get
yeah.
through. That's the key there.
For each one of the rows, you have to make sure the.
We can look at that.
Right, but if that's an angled, you're not having to remove this wall. You're just having to cut in where people can angle. I don't know. It's just a thought.
I mean, the question is it. Does it have the 18 and then 13 feet
yeah.
even for angled parking?
That's
I'm not
why
sure it's
like,
that wide, and that may have been the problem.
Why they took it out.
Yeah.
That may have been why they
did it. And then who owns this lot where they always have it roped off with orange?
It's for sale. You can buy it.
Private property. It's a private property owner.
Well, it used to when these people had a juice store there, then they used part of it. So this
it's
is still
their lot. They own it. They own this lot and that building, and they're selling it all.
Oh, okay. All right. So we'll probably put another restaurant. We'll need more parking.
I don't know.
Okay. I was just curious who owned that.
Do we know how many, because I brought it up before, so I've heard it from other residents, but with the annual fee with the residents. Because I did check with Astoria, Cannon Beach, Kansas City, Philmont. There are no other city that has paid parking charges annual fees for residential parking.
Do they have residents in their time limited areas is the other one though. I mean,
I know Tillamook does and Cannon Beach does and I read Cannon Beach, I talked to someone the other day at their city hall and I read an article in Lincoln City. They floated the idea several years ago but they decided not to do it.
I think from our perspective if we're not different, that means that it's being subsidized because somebody has to provide a permit for them for the parking program to work. And so, I mean, I think a lower fee is fine if you want to think about it, but some nominal fee should be charged to recover our costs.
Is the residential permit by address or by car, by license?
It would be by license holder within the household.
Oh, okay. The only reason I think it's a good thing to charge is there's so many vacation rentals down there.
Well, those are separate things.
But I'm just saying is
I
that some of those owners
yeah.
stay there sometimes, but then they're not there all the time, but then they want parking when they come. So 35, I know how much they make with those rental homes.
Well, to be clear, those individuals that own a short-term rental that don't reside there, but use it from time to time, or those who own seasonal housing, they
mm-hmm.
would all be eligible for residential permits, too. There's no way
yeah.
for us to sort out that kind of stuff.
Yeah. No, that's good.
I mean, you knew my position when I was on the parking committee. I thought $10 was fair because I agree there's got to be some cost where everyone just floods it and we can't just afford the labor. I feel personally that 35 is too high because there's a lot of retirees and people on fixed incomes.
Well,
and it's not a problem for us, even though we're not retired, but it certainly would be.
Well, but we could maybe have a thing where somebody has a fixed income, that they're able to get a different rate.
But that would make it very hard for city staff because, you know, I mean, I...
10's not going to recover costs.
Yeah.
20?
Maybe, yeah.
25? Oh, that's still lower
sure.
than what we had it pegged at. We probably might do it just mm-hmm. as a straight-up cost recovery.
So, you know, as a counselor, all respect you guys, your decision, whether it's 10, 20, 50, you know, whatever. But that's my input, you know, has always been my input.
Do we know how many residents would need permits because they don't have parking at their own residence?
We had that number. I don't have it off the top of my head, but we did have that tallied up.
It was 60-something, wasn't it?
It was in that range,
yeah.
60, 70 in that range.
So, I mean, I look at both sides of it because perception is once you put a fee on it,
yeah.
it rarely ever goes away. It only goes up in the future. So that's kind of the once you hit that stamp, it's.
Right. And we were, we lived in San Diego back in the 90s, and in that area, it was a $10 fee. And I just checked when I joined the parking committee, you know, 3 years ago, it's still $10.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to go up. Just, you know, it does create that impression. The other thing I was thinking is eventually it might be you are expanding the three-hour parking limits to a larger and larger swath of population if, you know, we really get our tourism going and it becomes an issue for residents. You know, that might, that'll bring in more money for them, for the city, too, by expanding it and time-limiting it and maybe possibly encouraging people to go to metered places. So there's a sort of a pathway I see as you grow. And I just want to make sure we've
grown 1,200 people in 25 years.
Yeah.
So the it's $35 a year.
Yeah.
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 Commercial is 35 a month.
Yeah.
So you want to do something different on the residential permits? 2025?
I think the lower you can get it, the better it is. So if the idea is to recover the cost of it, then, you know,
like
an estimate of the cost and figure out.
Because we've been providing them complimentary permits, so the city's been covering the cost of that up to this point since we've had the three-hour parking in place for years.
So they're used to getting it for free, and that's one of the issues, I think. But it is important, though, that we add, I mean, Derek's pointing out, it's the equity for everyone who's using it is contributing a little bit, so one group doesn't have to contribute everything.
Well, remember, you also had testimony from folks that, well, I should be able to, you know, I live here, so I should be able to park four cars and, you know,
for free,
time,
right.
for
so
free in these time-limited areas. And there's this inherent tension there in terms of, or how long, are you just leave it there for weeks on end.
And that's the balance. If they have four license holders and they all can afford $10, you know, 35, you know, they're not going to get four of those. But if it's 10, they might get four and then take up all that spot. So we wouldn't be accomplishing our goal. So I think it's a balance of where it's not going to hurt people too much and where it's going to encourage the behavior change.
I wasn't. Oh, sorry. Oh, I was just going to say, you know, if they own a house in my beach, they could probably afford $35 a year.
Yeah.
But maybe not.
Wasn't in the committee when Bayfront. Do we have residential permits in the Bayfront for
don't
people who live there?
Yeah,
okay.
We really don't. We do have an apartment or two, but they have their own
parking.
So,
I mean,
so we don't have that issue on the Bayfront.
I think 35 is really not unreasonable just for the cost of everything else that we pay for. And I also believe, knowing some of the residents down there, that they do have more than one car. And if it's even $20, I'm like, great. And I'll just get all these, and I have two roommates, and now they've taken up six spaces.
But they're not guaranteed parking.
No.
So when
right.
they leave for work or go to the store or whatever,
right.
a visitor comes in, they can, you know, we run into this a lot in Night Beach, of people saying there's somebody parking the spot.
I have a guy on my street thinking
yeah.
a chair
Tires.
Out there.
Yeah.
So do you want a motion or something?
I was looking to see if there was a consensus,
or just a consensus
on whether or not we need to make it, or just leave it as is and see where we end up
after further feedback.
Yeah.
That's another way to play it.
Sure.
Okay.
You know, it's sort of a nice point if people are saying, oh, that's too much, you can say, okay, well, then we'll cut it back a
mm-hmm.
little bit. So it gives you a little room maybe to go down, if that's helpful.
For buy-in.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to talk to you briefly about, you brought this up at one point, and I heard from particularly Chowderball with respect to metering the turnaround, but not Donahan Davis Park. And now with the state park changes, too.
I was going to ask that.
From Mike's perspective, he felt it just wasn't fair because there are businesses down there, too. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like all of the parking congestion issues are specifically in and around the turnaround. So.
And people do go and park there, but they don't go to the beach. Mm-hmm. And then they go do whatever in Night Beach. My concern is what's going to happen and how will we stop people from parking in the pack and not deciding not to pay, but they're all going to go.
I'd love to park in the back. We have 150 parking spaces there. That would be fantastic.
Yeah, and that's what we're trying to achieve.
And let them all park there.
When you're talking about the Chowderball, are you saying, what do they want? What do they want?
Mike felt that if you're going to meter the turnaround, why aren't you metering
Donna
and Davis Park?
And I thought the same thing, too.
Because people do park their park.
Wow.
And then they are encouraged for the beach to do whatever.
And there's not enough turnaround, and people get frustrated because we've made it so where the Vietnam Memorial is, you can't park there.
Right.
So
right.
People
where
get really frustrated
is.
That they can't go to the beach.
So something that Jerry's saying.
Yeah, there's only
that restaurant's now, or at least the last time I drove by, imagine there's going to be a restaurant back in there again.
Pacific Kitchen?
Which one? Oh,
Pacific Kitchen.
Yeah.
He said like 2 years, 2-3 years. It's going to be empty, and then they'll maybe do something.
So the rumor is because I think Hallmark owns that.
Yeah.
And when they were initially going to do it, I guess it was too much, or more than they thought it was going to be, when they were doing the all-red, so they said, let's get the all-red done, and then they're going to come back.
Yeah.
Is what my understanding was.
Right. And leave it the same size, or they're going to build something
I think they're going to do some construction.
Probably the same footprint.
One thing a few things. One, it would be treating the beach access as more or less the same, you know, in the area. They would be effectively the same as what the state park's doing as well. So, I mean, and it helps with the users.
The big issue is the people down there are really opposed to the metering of the turnaround. So if we add Don Davis, I don't know what, from a political and buy-in standpoint, that's where I would see it. But from a logical standpoint, I'm all in favor of doing that.
Yeah. And, you know, you see campers. They back up along the beach, and they're there all day.
All day, yeah.
You get complainers at that end, but then you probably appease other people together and go, okay.
Yeah.
That's
well, that's it's a classic case.
It's going to be one of those.
Yeah.
You'll appease these over here, and then somebody will pop up over here. So it's going to be, you're not going to make everybody happy.
If you were gonna do that, do you have any rough estimate of how much it would raise? And I guess we'd probably like looking at one or two meter things.
One.
Yeah.
So just one.
Because
it's not
that
big of a lot.
There's about 20 parking spots.
Yeah. So it's a little less than half of what the night turnaround.
Right. So the cost is
very. City on the big grass lot.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna ask.
Between
who owns the big grass lot? We could have tons of parking.
That has been pitched for parking in the past, and there's a lot of folks in Night Beach, they don't want to see that because they want to see an art park there.
Yeah, that's the performing arts,
OCCA?
Yeah, well, the committee, Public Arts Committee, that's it, is really looking at what they want to push for. They want to create an art walk kind of thing between pack and back. And really encourage that, so they would be. I feel they'd be very opposed to.
Which grass?
You know, behind Don Davis,
behind the bathrooms,
near the bathroom.
Yeah, between the parking lot and Coast.
They did use it this year for the festival.
For Bloom.
Yeah.
It was nice. So I think that the plans are to start reutilizing it more as a grass common space rather than parking. But it could, something like
that. For street fairs and stuff too, like concerts.
Well, you could come out a little bit from the parking, but another
row. What was the original reason we didn't put it over in Don Davis?
You know, we were trying to keep this as narrowly tailored as possible. I think one of the other discussions was trying to provide at least one, free beach access location, but now none of the beach access around here are going to be free, so why
Right, by that one.
Yeah.
What about Agate Beach, where all the surfers go, where the bathrooms are?
You know, I don't recall if that was on the list for the state or not.
I didn't see it, but is that who owns it?
That's state park.
I might have missed it, but I was curious because I'm like.
They've got a huge parking lot.
Yeah.
You know, although the one that really gets hit is the one that's right there on Ocean View, on the west side.
Well, I think Dom Davis, and like I said, even if you want to go to the beach, the pack is not that far away.
Right, it's another half a block.
Yeah.
There's about 30 probably on-street parking spots within a block from Don and Davis.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, there's a lot of on-street parking.
Yeah.
Hey, Robert, you said from a political standpoint, folks just don't want to meter the turnaround. What are their interests? I mean, what is it that makes them, is it just like a free parking lot or what?
Well, what I'm hearing is a lot of traditional. They're like, I've come here always. I've lived here always. We come down from another part of Newport for the sunsets. Why should we have to pay? That kind of, it's the usual. I feel it's a very resistance to change kind of thing. That's what I'm mostly hearing. And then there was the issue with the volunteers using it, which we resolved.
Right.
So,
on the visual arts.
So, and the locals can park at the pack and go walk and look at the
sunset. I mean, that's what I often hear. Oh, well, make them pay, but give us a local pass, too. So it's sort of a, you know, I don't want change. I don't have to pay. Same thing I think happened on the Bayfront because I joined the parking committee after that had been ironed out, too. So I feel it's a similar thing, but they're just a Nye Neighbors Association, and they're very well organized. They haven't taken a stance on it yet, but I'm just concerned about all the public meetings we've had. Everyone's been opposed to it, and no one's in favor of it.
Opposed to Dunn Davis?
To just metering.
Yeah.
And do they understand that it goes to improvements?
It's a process of education, and I'm working on that as much as I can. Whenever I'm walking the dog and someone says, hey, aren't you that? And I'll say, here's what we're looking to do and why. And especially when you tell them about the ADA parking improvements that need to be done to the Visual Arts Center, and it's like, well, that's never going to happen if we don't get money.
Right.
People get more interested in like, oh, well, maybe it makes sense. So I think we can overcome that, even if we do both parks, especially if there's the logic plus the state doing it too. Now might be the time to really push that.
Yeah.
It's not 24 hours a day. It's not 7 days a week.
Right.
It's not 360. No, it's 6 months a year full time. But it ends at 7, so the evenings are still
free. Yeah.
Yeah, down on the Bayfront.
Yeah.
This one's still 9 to 6, which is what it has been for a very long time.
Right. And then they can park for free and watch the sunset in the summer, which is what they want to come anyhow.
You're outside that window at that point.
Right, you're outside the window. And I think that's one of the things people start thinking, oh, it's 24 hours.
And it's not.
So it's all about education. That's what we're going to really have to do. I think that's what we're hoping the committee will do. You know, I'm trying to get the Nye Neighbors Association buy-in. They'll be educating, too. I think we'll be able to move forward with that.
And, Derek, Agate Beach isn't on their list.
Okay.
I wish it was.
One of the points that I run into a lot with people, especially ones like what Robert said, that are just like, it's always been this way, you know, I've been coming here for years, et cetera, et cetera. I think maybe if we talked a little bit more about how the area is changing, has changed, and will continue to change. I mean, folks have got to understand at a certain point that, we've experienced something like, I don't know, 25% population growth in the last 30 years in Newport. And that continues. You have to do something. If you don't increase capacity, you got to create some kind of methodology to allow people to have access. Otherwise, they're not going to, you won't be able to do the things that you've always done because you're going to get here and it's already going to be taken up. You know what I mean? I don't know if focusing on that a little bit more would help or not. I don't know.
No, I think it would help.
Well, and just the climate, there's not as much federal dollars available either for.
There won't be for a while. Right. But, I mean, yeah. Right. I mean, there's a real cost to maintaining the assets. There are benefits to manage parking and not trying to force off-street parking where you can't get it. know, and that then becomes an impediment to business redevelopment. And Night Beach has seen a fair amount of investment, as has the Bayfront. You'd like to see that continue.
Yeah.
And that these types of programs facilitate that. Yes, it's changed. There is no magic pot of gold there that our elected officials can tap into to pay for this stuff. I mean, there's no dedicated funding for this. I mean, way, way back in the day, there would have been some general fund dollars that could have been thrown at it, but with measures 550 restricting the, you know, property tax increases since the, and those went into effect in the early 90s, you've seen all jurisdictions just, you know, their general fund now is just basic services, and so you're having to tap other, you know,
user funds
to pay for this kind of stuff. So what do you think about putting Dawn and Davis Park in there in a manner comparable to the Nine Beach turnaround and see what happens?
I mean, I feel like his impetus to say, why not Dawn Davis Park, was more as a retaliative comment of like, you're kind of screwing us with this parking, why aren't those people screwed too? That being said, so my question is he really proposing that? Or is he just like...
For Mike, it could very well have been grumpy. About that, saying, hey, you know, why not them? I feel like I'm being put at a competitive disadvantage when I'm recruiting cooks.
Right.
And it was brought up in public comment in a couple of the previous meetings last year. Or
okay. So other people would like it to be too.
It was brought. It was.
Okay.
It wasn't just him. I've heard it from other people just in generalized too.
And we do get a lot of transient people, like I said, that stay there all day in campers or whatever.
I mean, I think it's great for the city, sure, out of another place. I mean.
You know, it's dynamics a little bit different than the turnaround, but still you do have a lot of activity there. You know, you've got a lot of hotels, you've got, you know.
Yeah.
It's full a lot.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, like, the all-red hotels got to love that if we do that, because then, you know, people aren't staying there all day in campers that...
Yeah, because to be fair too, the Allred's providing their
lot of parking.
They've got between the two hotels they have there.
Yeah.
They pretty much cover.
They won't have to be buying permits.
Is there a reason that you wouldn't want the Dawn Davis Park as like with your teams?
No.
Yeah, I say add it in.
No, I mean, I guess the other flip side of that is the Veterans Memorial is down there, and so there's a lot of veterans that do go visit, or just a lot of people that go to see it.
Mm-hmm.
It's being vitalized. I think the artwork that's down there, or the sculpture.
But there's a very large public parking lot there, which is continues to be free. So I think there needs to be a lot more education on the fact that the PAC is a very large free parking option.
Put a big free.
Well, I mean, like all of the Bayfront parking signs, can you add a PAC Bayfront sign? Or a PAC sign that says
PAC free parking? Yeah, I'm jotting that down. See what we can do on that front.
You know, I mean, frankly, none of the people that worked at the restaurant ever parked in the Dawn Davis lot. They parked in front of our house.
What street are you on?
We're right next door to the Pacific Kitchen.
Oh.
So the ones that worked at Pacific Kitchen, we knew them. We knew who they were.
Right.
And they parked in front of our house. So if there was anybody parked in front of our driveway, it was going to be a restaurant employee.
Yeah. That's just so funny because they could have just parked everywhere.
But they don't.
I know.
I think a lot of people don't even think the PAC is free or you can use it.
But the signage, that would be good.
Yeah.
Plus would help with congestion.
So I would still like to bring up the... sound like a broken record since parking has been discussed is it's expensive to monitor and enforce and for compliance and things like that. We have one parking officer that could literally spend an entire day on the Bayfront, but he is paid to do the entire city.
Mm-hmm.
And so with looking at adding Night Beach, and while it's small, it still takes time.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're looking at timed parking, is it takes even more time because there has to be a lot more trips gone through. And so then if you add the other one, you know, we're adding more things, so that means we'll spend less time in other areas. And so it's a give and take throughout this whole thing.
But it also could increase funds if we could have two people.
It would, but again, it's parking enforcement. While it's not a very... on a super well-paid position.
$79,000.
Well, that's with all benefits.
Oh.
the actual paycheck's not. You know, but it's a great first-time job. It's a great.
Can you use volunteer officers?
No. They have to be sworn.
Well, no. I swear our park. I'm the one, I give our parking enforcement authority. Mm-hmm. I can give a volunteer authority to do it. But historically, really, the only thing volunteers do is the enforcement of disabled or handicapped parking.
Well, the other thing to keep
but
in
they
mind.
Can do like Don Davis Park or.
No. No, for the simple fact that it's very, very high tech now.
Mm-hmm.
With the license plate reader technology,
right.
With everything that goes into it.
And that's so installed in a police car too, right?
It's installed in a car.
Yeah.
So we'd have to, I mean, it's two of everything.
Right.
And so, you know, you're looking at, yes, you're at $70,000 or $80,000 for the person, but now we're also probably going to be dealing with up to about $40,000 in equipment. So, startup costs are expensive.
Anything else on this topic?
Just one thing in your FAQ.
Yes.
It says Nine Beach turnaround will be set hourly rate with an 8-hour maximum stay. I thought it was only a 4-hour maximum stay. That's what I remember from a discussion. But
I thought we were going with a bigger one there because of people hanging out at the beach and then coming up to the restaurant. I thought that should be a long time.
I might have been online and zoned out.
I think 8 is way too long. I think 6 is reasonable. First of all, most people, if you watch them out there, they don't stay the whole time because the wind comes up or whatever. But I think 6 hours is.
I don't remember.
8 hours.
Because we really don't have a corollary on the Bay.
Right.
Doesn't really have beach access,
no.
So it's a different dynamic.
So it's.
I mean, if you're trying to get turnaround, 8 hours is zero turnaround.
Yeah, and there are so many restaurants there, so you know they then that makes it, you know, so it's all goes to beach goers and not so much for turning around for the restaurant.
Yeah, well, I came in late to the committee when the afternoon kicked off. I remember too. I think right now it's 16 hours.
16 hours right now.
Yeah, yeah. The study, the turnaround, they did the study, granted it was back in like 2018, even at 16-hour street parking, the turnaround was only, cars were only staying a couple hours already. So I think that's why it was just,
yeah,
you knocked out 8 hours. And
300 and something distinct, as I recall. I have to go back, but I had a number on it. It was over 300
was,
in terms of number of distinct uses.
You could stay there almost all day for free. There were still people leaving every 2 hours anyway. So,
yeah, and I guess if you're metering it and you're paying for 8 hours, that's you're probably not really. I mean, the turnover is inherent in the meters, and not in how long you can pay the meters, really.
Do you guys have a breakdown on like how many people pay for an hour, how many pay for 2, 3, 4? Would that be a piece of data we could track? So if we do 8 and we see like 90% of the people are staying for 8.
Didn't we have that in the last meeting
it.
For the Bayfront?
Yeah,
yeah. The chart showed us.
Yeah.
Okay.
It broke it down how long. The average was
like
$2.
Our corollary is how much the average payment is per transaction. And it was like, I want to say it's like $2.17 or something.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's, sense, if you go 8, it's not the end of the world, because if we see everyone's abusing it, then we can just adjust it in the future with just changing the signs.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good point. Let's say leave it.
Might as well leave it. It's already in there.
That was 4.3 on the agenda.
Sorry, that was 4.2. 4.3 city center, and then, so
you
guys ready to move to the next one?
Oh, sorry. I didn't know this was. On ours, it says 4.2 is the impact of city center, but whatever.
See, they're just reversed.
Oh, reversed. Sorry.
Sorry.
I took them backwards.
You're good.
Okay. All right, I'm going to stop share here. City center. I wanted to inform you, and really, any feedback you have is I appreciate. I was hoping Doretta was going to make today's meeting, but she didn't make it. Things are moving forward on City Center, and City Council held a public hearing on the policy component with the transportation solutions, and we'll hold a final public hearing on that.
How'd that go?
Fine.
No one came.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Two people.
When's the next one, did you say?
September 2nd.
After Labor Day.
Well, here's the deal, though. I mean, it's not that notice wasn't provided. I mean, we sent notice.
People just don't have any idea what's coming. and they just have no idea.
Well, it's interesting because we sent this to the email list we developed of people who attended the public events. So we had 100 plus, just a little over 100 emails that we sent out advising them that a decision should be made.
I don't mean those people. I mean people who live here who aren't on the email list. You know what I mean? Like if it was on the front page of the newspaper or something, like maybe that's a good place to put that.
But see, but that was well advertised on when we held the public event.
Yeah.
We had like 380 people engaged.
I think it's great. That's great.
That's what we could get. You know, there'll always be folks that unplug in, and some of the solutions aren't going to happen for a number of years anyway.
Sure.
And there will be further engagement opportunities down the road when we're talking
about plans, design plans, and
design
stuff.
Plans for transportation improvements and stuff like that. But one change with the code that we're going to be making is we need to clean up the boundary of the city center district. And
I didn't see that map in here printed.
I'm going to show a couple things here. First, I'm going to bring up there was form-based codes information that was in the packet. I didn't expect you to read it all. There's a lot of it. It's provided for background. But one of the key concepts here is we're creating a design district for the city center. So it'll be similar in IBH, but tailored to the city center. And so on the left, you see the boundary of what the full design district is. Now, on the right, what you see is there's really three components to it. You've got...
I don't have a printed copy of that, right? Or can you blow it up more?
I'll just keep blowing it up so you can see it a little better. So, does that help a little bit?
Oh, yeah.
So the diagram on the left shows the district, the full city center design review district.
And what street is the boundary that's on the Bayside?
Well, you have Canyon, that little finger that extends down to towards Bay Boulevard there.
Mm-hmm.
That's Canyon Way. That's an area where actually the Bayfront district and the city center district overlap. And so we were going to pull that out of the city center and just leave it in the Bayfront. That's where Brody's, Newport Brewery is.
What about my building, my office? The white one across from the public bathroom.
You picked up the one from, that was the attorney's office?
Yeah. That's the business, that's the Nye Beach, or that's the city center?
That's probably in city, I'd have to take a look at it, Janelle.
Okay.
Where that boundary line is,
okay.
Whether or not that falls at Bayfront or City Center.
Okay.
But what we're planning to do is clean that up so the two align with each other. And we were going to leave the Bay one as is and just wrap the City Center around it so that they match up and don't overlap.
Sort of like a puzzle. Mm-hmm. Puzzle piece.
But on the right-hand side, what you're looking at is... Within the city center design district, there are three distinct areas that have a little bit different rules, or will have a little bit different rules. You've got the US 20 oriented area up here. You've got what they call the traditional, or what the consultants call the traditional downtown core here with the short couplet. And then you've got the highway zone down here, which is kind of your typical US 101 open or travel lanes with a center lane in it. And so the existing city center district doesn't align with any of these three. Probably most closely aligns with the one in the middle, which is what we're calling the traditional downtown area. And so our plan, I'm going to take a stop share on this and bring up the other map, is to adjust the boundary, and this is pretty busy, and I apologize for that, but I thought we printed some hard, we have some hard copies of this one. Over here.
I only saw these.
Bobby did. Yeah.
Okay.
I wish this.
Oh, do you have two copies?
No, they're three separate.
Oh,
standards.
Okay. Well, I'm looking ahead.
Anyway. So really what you're looking at here, you're looking at, I tried to sort of overlay three things, and then I've got the color of the zoning below it. So the existing city center district is the green hatch. So it extends over into that Alder and Second and Neff area. It also extends up into Olive here, or US 20, almost to Coos. So it's picking up the... You know, got Restores in there. Walgreens is there. Goodwill's there. That's what that little block is. It picks up some R4 down here towards the Bayfront as well. What you see with the white is the traditional downtown district, and our plan is to describe the. Redescribe the city center district to align with that traditional downtown and just picks up the couplet in that area. Where that's different is it's going to pick up some area between Abbey there. We'll go down a little bit further than where it extends right now. It stops at Fall. So it'll pick up another block into Abbey and pick up a few properties around the jail and the courthouse, but we it's more or less the same size as the existing district, just described a little bit differently.
So you're going to drop off the hatch part out by Alder?
Correct.
And what about the square that's...
That would drop off too.
So that's going to drop off too. And so that would not be part of the district?
City center district,
okay.
To start with, because the area that... is likely, if we're successful in getting additional investment, that's that commercial traditional core area where we would expect to see
housing
and all that kind of stuff. Now we're going to get some on the 20 corridor as well as you particularly say between US 20 and the high school. There's some opportunities up there, but it's not quite the same dynamic, and we didn't feel right now that we wanted to expand the city center district to pick up those areas.
How many stories can they go up there for housing?
You got 50-foot maximum height, so four stories is what I would expect to see. You could sort of pull off if you're going to do multifamily. And part of this whole change is making it easier to do residential in these commercial areas, so you're going to have a bit more flexibility in that regard. It's being matched up with the transportation solutions, the form-based codes, so some different... When I say form-based, that means you have design, clear and objective design standards that basically tell you kind of that influence your architectural style, placement of the building, that kind of thing, where you can place signage on the exterior of the building.
Are you changing some of those to be R4 or higher?
There are no zone changes.
Okay, the
this.
Zones are the same. Okay.
All the zones will stay the same. The difference is that in the commercial zones, the residential allowances are being expanded. You can do residential at street grade in many areas, except where we're reserving and requiring retail on the first floor. And so we have some of those carved out along 101 and 9th where you would want them.
So if you look at the map, the first map with the curved, the corners that are purple,
right.
Those are the retail carve-outs.
Right, like Night Beach, where they have a business on the bottom.
Right, so they wouldn't be able to go, they'd have to be business on the bottom. They couldn't go all
residential.
But in the middle of the block, they can. Because the thinking is that commercially, people are parking on corners and they're walking around corners, so you want those to be the kind of the draws. And then people are less likely to go to the middle. You know, so you could make that fully residential, and it doesn't impact it as much.
Yeah, so what Robert's talking about, you see these little around the corners here, the dark little dark purple spots. I'm going to really zoom it up so you can see it.
What streets are those, the purples?
They're basically on all the cross streets.
Yeah, I mean, so you're looking at 101 and 9th here.
Oh, okay.
With the couplet option overlaid.
Okay.
And you know, the intervening streets, you're looking at Lee, Herbert, and Alder.
So where you see the dark purple, that's where those, you know, with the form-based code, that's going to be reserved for retail on the first floor. Outside of that, you know,
put a townhouse in.
You put townhouse. You could put fourplex, sixplex. You know, middle housing concepts or multifamily. That's
also
street grade.
And the parking doesn't include in the stories, or it does?
You know, they'll have the ability to take advantage of on-street parking, much like Bayfront and Night Beach. And once the way this is set up, there.
No,
will
but I mean, if you do parking down, like under.
One of the options, particularly with 9th and 101, given the grade separation, is if we get a good project in there and do the parking off of 9th underneath, and then you do your storage above that. So the way, I think the gist of it for you, we're looking to resize the city center parking district, at least for the time being, to match up with this kind of traditional downtown area development pattern. And then, you know, they'll be able to, we're not making any changes to the parking district. It's still going to be what it is for now with the business license surcharge. And eventually, if we're successful in getting some redevelopment in this area, and we start experiencing parking congestion issues, we'll do a new study. If it confirms we've got a congestion issue, like the last study confirmed for Bayfront Night Beach, then they'll go into a metered parking like everybody else.
Which is our goal.
Which is our goal.
It's our goal.
We just don't have that kind of demand.
The only
right
problem
now
with those kind of buildings is like a past Nana's going west, no, east, where they built those three townhomes on 3rd Street. They didn't require them to do any parking. So where are they all parking? They're all parking in Night Beach. And some of those homes have, you know, multiple families in them, and they're taking up space. So I just see that to be more of a problem if we're not requiring at least a space in between to have some parking, because that's what's now happening. People are building. And that's what the other building on High Street, is it? They're building those big 3-story huge buildings. There's no parking up above. So where are they going to build park? Night Beach area.
Mm-hmm. One thing to keep in mind statewide, and this is something our council is well aware of, but not everybody in the community is local governments have largely been preempted from requiring off-street parking for residential because of the crisis in the state.
Of housing.
The governor's office and the legislature followed the governor's lead on this and said, you know, local governments have been requiring too much off-street parking. That has been an impediment to housing development. Therefore, we cannot require it in most circumstances.
What's the thought of, because I know there's a lot of short-term rentals. I know. Seaside has a thing where if you use your house as a short-term rental, you have to have at least 2 off-street parking spaces for if you have up to 3 bedrooms. And an additional off-street parking space for every bedroom after that, if you use your house as a short-term.
Right, we have off-street parking requirements for short-term rentals.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that's. But what I'm talking about here right now is just straight up residential. And we.
Like, I just want people coming in, you know, building homes and making vacation rentals, and then.
Well,
right. The council also has we have a license cap right now that really prevents the number from growing. And we use the vacation rental licensing fees to pay for code enforcement, Jason's folks, to monitor that. And we have a third-party vendor that we use to assist with monitoring intermediary platforms like Airbnb and VRBO. So we have a reasonably good handle on the number of short-term rentals. We have a 3-4-year wait list at this point. And then, you know, this is from a program that we set up in 2019. So we've got a few years working with it at this point. I don't, you know, none of the discussions we're having now deal with short-term rentals at all. You know, we're going to be working with this program until the council decides, you know, we need to make adjustments.
Is it possible that I see developers coming in and buying up people's homes to build those? Is it possible that when that is done, that if they had off-street parking, that they still have to keep the off-street parking, so in that footprint, they still then can build their building, but they can't just go to the
edge of their property and take away that parking. Isn't there a way to say, if you buy that piece of property and you want to put in multi-housing, if you already have one parking space, you have to still have one parking space?
We provide on-street parking credits, but only for the frontage adjacent to a property. And most multifamily generate enough demand that they'll have to provide some off-street parking, just not all of it. They can rely a little bit on your on-street.
Yeah, I just see people getting rid of their driveways.
Your single-family, the smaller ones, your townhouses, what they can get away with relying entirely on on-street in
right.
many cases if they've got enough frontage. But multifamily won't get there because your density is considerably higher, your demand for parking is higher. You're not going to have enough frontage adjacent where you could say, claim those spaces as being potentially available, and so they end up having to provide some off-street. The other thing we do want to make sure with multifamily too, we have a little bit of off-street, at least a little bit, is because that's generally the only way you get ADA now.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard to get ADA accessible spaces in a public right away, just because of the way they're configured.
Right.
They work best with a 90-degree angled-in kind of setup, which you typically would have in a parking lot. And it's important to have those. And with multifamily in particular, the multifamily units at street grade are required by code, building codes. At least some of those have to be either accessible or what we call convertible.
Mm-hmm.
So we have either an A type or a B type. A being fully accessible from day one.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got a disability, you can rent that unit and it's fully functional for you. B would type units one that could be converted with modest additional expense. So it's something we're aware of and we stay on top of. So I just wanted to give you a heads up about where things are going on City Center and it's not the forgotten stepchild here. There's actually going to be quite a bit of investment over the coming years to really try to kind of reshape how that all works, both on a transportation and streetscape side and on the private side.
And what is the time frame for all of that? Like, if everything actually happens in somewhat of a way you think it will?
The biggest improvement, so for example, we're moving on multiple fronts. So we're pursuing multiple strategies, and it's not just our office. We've got multiple city departments engaged in this. We're on the short term. What we're looking at is, what kind of beautification efforts can we do to the area that are not going to have to be torn out with larger transportation improvements that are going to take a number of years to get lined up, and that's being pursued right now. Some of that might be say that, we've got. Try to get a little bit more green space in along the 101 corridor. You got the Founding Rock Park there right by the Armory. There might be some opportunities to make that a little bit bigger public space. That's not going to interfere with these other larger transportation
systems. But parking issues, I'm just talking how long is it before you actually have a parking issue? Like, are you going to take down those buildings? Like, which building? I don't know. This map shows.
Oh.
Is
that 10 years? Is that?
Well, we just took down one commercial building.
Right.
The Urban Renewal Agency is going to continue to try to cobble together some properties for demonstration project. And when I say demonstration project, you can expect that to be, say, maybe a partnership with an entity like the Housing Authority, where we could get multi-story, multi-family with a first floor. Flex commercial office, space for nonprofits. I mean, that could look a lot of different. That's reasonable to expect, some traction on that within the next, I'd say, 3 to 5 years to get that kind of piece done. The larger transportation solution with the couplet is probably 7 to 10 years. We've been moving into a 30% design pretty promptly this particular one will require some targeted property acquisition. The adult bookstore property, for example, would have to be purchased.
Good.
You could expect us to go after that, to condemn that. But, to acquire it, that probably would require condemnation to acquire it, would then still mean, we have to address relocation and other issues because because of that, and make sure that they're fairly compensated. That's part of the
sure.
what eminent use of eminent domain is about. So that takes some time to resolve. There's a desire near term to get some pop-up activation of some of the publicly available spaces, more utilization of the 9th and Herbert, better utilization of 9th and Herbert lot. So there's some other pieces that'll move on a shorter timeline. There's one thing we're moving into too pretty promptly here is more business engagement, particularly along the 101 corridor that we're looking at here, to come to terms with, is DECO really viable? Should this area have a different strive for a different theme, or and if so, what should that be? Is there interest in the businesses in this area to become active as an association again? They used to be, but it fell apart. And with all of the disinvestment that's happened in that area, you just haven't had that kind of business interest in coming together. But maybe recognizing there's going to be funding coming through. I mean, we've got a fair amount of urban renewal dollars that we have dedicated for this area and can leverage other funding, just not the same. Your point is well taken about federal, but in our experience with federal is administrations come and go, and there will be another slug of money for infrastructure at some point, and we want to be in a position to leverage it, And so that's kind of what we're trying to do.
Parking enforcement issues?
Yep, last item, Jason.
I thought he was kidding when he said it was the last one.
No, I told you.
Well, actually, it says last on ours is the Bayfront proposal for art structures. But
oh, sorry, that is actually last. Yeah, sorry, okay. That's Robert. You're second to last.
Okay, so some of the things we've run into this year, our collections rate is down half from what it was 2024. In 2024, it was around 53%. That's people that paid prior to having to go to collections or any other extremities, any other extremes. Now we're at 28%.
That's good.
No, it's bad.
No, it's bad.
No,
you're
only
collecting.
Yeah. Oh, only 20%.
Yeah. Are paying before it goes to collections.
Yeah. So, yeah, only 25% are paying before it goes to collections, which means we're sending a lot more to collections. The collections rate, once something goes to collections that's paid, is less than 2%. So we're putting in a lot of effort into the enforcement, but we're just really hamstrung and limited on what the city's ability is to collect.
Yeah.
So
Do we use a collection service?
Yeah.
Yeah, we do. We do. So they do everything they can. I mean, they really the only thing you can do is you just keep really writing a lot of letters. So that's what we do. We write a lot of letters.
You were reactivating the boot program.
The boot was reactivated August 1st, and so the vehicle immobilization. And so any vehicle that has four or more unpaid parking citations, or it says any one that's later than 45 days, which we couldn't keep up. We need a whole fleet of boots to go track those down. So what we did was, because we haven't done this in over a decade, is we identified the worst offenders.
Yeah.
And we identified the worst offenders as anybody with five or more, any vehicle with five or more parking citations. And we went back to 2024. So for 2024, for the last 2 years, there's been 22 vehicles that have five or more. And shockingly, there are six that have eight or more. And so they're
That's not that bad.
One vehicle?
Severe ADD. It's not that.
And so with the LPR system, we're able to enter these vehicles into the LPR. And so if our parking enforcement officer sees them, he's alerted there's a vehicle. Unfortunately, the only vehicle that we've actually, he said, what's funny, I asked him today, he goes, last month, I saw these things everywhere. These cars were absolutely everywhere. August 1st, gone. Can't
they were reading the news.
Yeah. He has found many of them in their driveway, but we will not boot a vehicle on private property. That's just not the right thing to do. The one vehicle he did find had great big old monster tires that our boot wouldn't fit on.
So you just remove the tire.
No, not so much. So anyway, we're still, Corin is doing, he's doing an amazing job. He stays busy all day long. He's able to cover all kinds of areas. He also helps the CSOs with the abandoned vehicles. Those are, they've gone up
crazy
fivefold, tenfold over the last year, including RVs. So there's a lot of money being spent on the removal of those to keep our streets pretty. The biggest thing or hurdle we're going to run into is Corin did such a great job. He applied for a police officer and he was selected. Mm-hmm. And so,
yay, but good.
It is good. This has been
a pattern.
It is. Well, I guess it tells us we're hiring the right people and we're doing something
or
right.
Or you need to hire a much older person that won't.
Well, you can get them to apply. That'd be great. So, but the, one of the deals is Corin did. He's still going through all the hiring phases, but he was given a job offer. And I told him, just like when Donald became a police officer, I said, you can do whatever you want, but you're doing parking till October. It's kind of the deal. Kind of the deal we had. October's, you know, when we go into the off season. So we're hoping to have somebody to be able to replace Corin by then. Yeah. Also before Corin would go to the academy, so Donald, he could work with him, train him, show him all the new ins and outs. In October, when we go to the off season, we're going to upgrade all of the pay stations to upgrade new software, which will allow us to do everything from a computer. Mm-hmm. And we kind of do it from computer now, and then we put it onto a drive and have to go to each machine. It's not cool. It's an all-day process. But this will be able to give us more live data. This will be able to also then help T2, our company that we utilize, that we contract, to troubleshoot from a distance, because we get, unfortunately, I don't know if we're Bayfront's covered in solar flares or what, but things just lose connection, and it only has to take a second. And boy, does the world stop spinning for, 10 minutes. So, that's what we're dealing with. They're super busy. He's writing a lot of tickets. He writes probably equal or more warnings than he does citations. So, like we said before, you know, it's the goal is to change behavior, and if that requires a warning, then that's what we'll do. So, and he's able to keep track because of the technology we use if he's issued a warning before. Okay. So the same people generally aren't going to get multiple warnings. Mm-hmm. If you have any questions, I have lots of stats, but one of the things you had asked about is I think the average stay on the Bayfront is around 2.5 hours. The paid, whatever the turnover is about 2.5 hours.
And since you have the, I'll just ask a question. Where are the cars coming from? Do you have access to the data of where they're from?
Which ones? The ones that are...
Yeah, I mean, just...
Not paying tickets, or...
Well, you're not tracking every license plate, right? It doesn't hold it or save it.
No. It does on the back end that we don't see because, you know, instead of going around and chalking vehicles...
Yeah.
It electronically chalks them.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think it stores that information.
Okay.
But I can tell you based on citations where each one's come from. I mean, at least the state.
Right.
So that's the only thing we know.
So I'm just curious if we can use your data to get tourism information.
No.
Okay.
Because the only thing I know is that the license plate and the state.
Yeah. You don't know their address. Or
we don't. Well, once it goes to unpaid or collections, we do.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But that's all information we have to pay for to get.
Okay.
And then we would never show that.
Yeah.
That'd be bad. Yeah. How much are you offering?
You mentioned the truck being too big for the boot. Is there an alternative like towing that, or would we need to update the ordinance?
There is. We had this discussion today. So our code allows police officers to tow a vehicle or impound a vehicle for a variety of reasons. That's under a separate section of the code, not the boot code. So we're trying to be consistent that if we're enforcing based on the boot, that's the section that we're following. So if it becomes a hazard or a super repeat offender type thing, we can look at plan B. We're just not there yet.
So like blocking driveways would be a thing we would tow them, I assume.
Well, that's its point.
Yeah.
So on that big vehicle, is there a way to put a warning ticket on them to let them know that
we've already had 8.
No, but to say we will tow.
Let me guess,
it's
the van that says love on it all over.
Oh, he moves every 3 days. He knows how to the game between that and the pot store.
That one was actually impounded and he paid to have it unimpounded and put back on the streets.
Oh, he's got money.
He you see there's always a sticker on it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the enforcement in a nutshell.
So you think it's due to the sort of the inflationary pressure of why people aren't paying until they get a lot of letters, or is it?
There's a variety of reasons why people don't. I know some of them are just, they don't agree with it, and they're just like, keep writing me tickets all day long, what are you going to do?
Hurt your credit score.
Yeah. Well, if you get a boot on your vehicle, the only way you get it off is you have to pay everything.
This is also the first summer, right? The first full summer that we've had it. So people...
No, we had it last summer.
Well, not the full summer.
Yeah, we were up. We were up
April. Were we?
May 1.
Okay.
And that's why I'm troubled by such a precipitous drop in people paying the parking tickets.
But they're just not all parking tickets for meters. There's other.
Well, there's a variety of things.
Yeah.
There's, 12 or 15 different code violations that people get cited.
So a lot of the people who aren't paying could be that violation rather than a meter violation?
A lot of them. Most of them are meter or permit violations is the majority of them. But there's still, the unsafe parking back to an angle. That's super common on the Bayfront.
Mm-hmm. Here in Oregon, does DMV get notified so they can't register the vehicle until they're paid?
That's crazy.
That was smart.
No, no sanctions. Just whatever locally we do. So, but we'll keep trying. We'll keep doing our thing. We'll keep. I don't feel we have to change anything in our behavior or the way we're doing things. I think we're doing it all the right way. I think the codes all support everything that we're doing, and there's no other loopholes that we've identified that we need to go back and ask the council to
modify
or change. What
about the communication? Is there things we can improve on communication to the person, like the actual ticket? Does something else need to be printed on the ticket?
There's a lot of – the tickets are very informative. They cover everything, including what happens if you don't pay.
Okay.
I don't agree from her 5 minutes after she got one.
Yeah.
The municipal court, that's still pretty light touch for the judge at this point. He doesn't get much of that.
No, there's a few people that come in and want to contest, but boy, it's very few.
Well, thank you for the report.
Yeah, great. Yeah. Thanks. Sculptures on the paper.
You're right.
Yeah. Well, so the public art committee is looking for ways to beautify the Bayfront, everywhere, but there was a lot of talk about not just making it a Nye Beach. One of the things they suggested was painting murals on the bathrooms or other publicly owned buildings, and one thing was to maybe put some statues or sculptures like in the corner of some of the parking lots. So I said, well, I'll run it by the parking committee. We're going to have a discussion about the feasibility and desirability of that, and then take it back to them.
I know that just my two cents is I know that when I was on the other committee for the Discover Newport, we really wanted the art community to do those sea lions. So they have this thing that, I don't know if it's where it is now, but 10 years ago or something, it was in Europe, right? And there was this artist who made these, whatever kind of sea lions, and then local artists were the ones to actually put their art on the sea lion. The sea lion was a canvas, then artists would come and they would create the work, and then they moved them all around.
But they had one at the PAC for a while. And Grants Pass, I think, has bears.
And Eugene has their ducks.
And okay,
their
ducks. Yeah. I mean, I love that idea.
But so, it's the funding that they...
That's what they were talking about was, would there be some parking funds to match with the performing arts or the arts fund, public arts funds, to do something in and around maybe a parking lot or like the murals? Those are a good thing. And I actually just thought, is there any way that you can use maybe decorations around the meter paying stations to make them, people are complaining about how they're not noticeable. Well, what if they had some painting on them or something like that? I don't know if that would violate the warranties
or anything.
But
we rent
them,
don't
we? No, we
don't.
No, we own.
But warranty things, they sometimes tell you can't do that. Or it's technically not feasible.
Are they still getting their percentage of how they get their money? Because I know the committee has now changed. It's
right.
Part of it. Are they still getting the same funding?
The city's providing the same funding.
Okay.
But they also are obviously going out for their own grants and stuff like that, too. So.
It strikes me, and this is my two cents, that this is a good tourist-oriented back-bucket type
totally,
item.
Totally. I like the sea lions.
Because we do tend to, that tends to be a healthier fund on parking.
Sure.
The seals are smaller.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll let them know that that's, from a money standpoint, that's a better avenue to pursue.
As far as parking, if it's not taking away spaces and it's adding beautification.
Yeah.
100% mm-hmm.
Sure. And it could be a cool identifier, you know, if it was something that, you know, something that fit over the box, or you know, you don't want to cover it up or anything like that.
I think a mural on the bathrooms. You know, we've lost so many murals over the years. I mean, famous artists painted some of those, and we've lost them. So I think painting the bathroom would be great to put a mural on there.
Another area which is underutilized is the Fern Dock down there on the east side. You know, I mean, it extends out into the bay.
Oh my God, yes. I totally have been thinking about that forever, about how there, if that could be some kind of a gathering spot,
right?
You know,
it's a nice area.
Yeah, it? And people do. You got the bubble guy out there sometimes. You got different people who pop up stuff.
So I'm just, you know, one of my goals is to foster the communication between the groups, so you know we can pool resources wherever we're possible and not going in opposite directions. Definitely wherever possible. So. I'm just bringing it to you as the liaison on another committee I'm on. So.
Abbey Street Pier, still public. The Bay Street Pier,
there's
down
so many
on the far
down
side,
there
that's public. You've got the whole, well, you've got targeted spots on the boardwalk that would probably be available too. So there's spots.
Well, they talked to the city engineering, who's kind of concerned about
weight. You have to be careful about weight.
That's
no
why I suggested the piers, or the parking lots, because they're on terra firma.
Right. Yeah, we have to be careful about weight.
Right. So
on the nature of the sculpture.
Right. But so you guys are intrigued by that idea. I'll bring that a couple of these ideas, like public bathrooms here, Fern Dock, maybe doing something with the meter pay stations, Abbey Street Pier.
Abbey Street lot has some spaces, some corners that are not for parking that would be available. Yeah, that are striped right now. They're just white striped.
And mural the bathroom, I think, is a good idea.
I think if you looked at the parking map right now, you could fit probably 4-2 on each side, something down there.
Sure. I'll let them know, and then we'll see where they're going.
I'm concerned about art on the actual kiosks.
I wouldn't touch the actual.
Yeah.
I wouldn't touch the pay stations.
Okay.
No.
Also
what about, like,
expensive.
Doing the...
And then people start putting stickers.
On the ground, the concrete painting or something like that. So there'd be, like... You know, a lot of cities have, like, you paint ducks, say, in a trail, and it kind of leads people to places.
I got back last night.
Yeah.
We were in Brazil picking up my daughter. She was on exchange. And they're, all of their streets are, like, in Rio and the other cities, they're all cobblestone. I mean, in the big cities. And they're black and white in different patterns.
Oh,
and it was so cool. But even your new concrete that you're pouring here to fix these curbs, maybe they could do something with that. I
like stamp a sea lion.
Yeah, like some kind of.
You'd probably want to have a conversation. I expect the council to want a conversation about maintenance. That's the one thing. When
true.
When you do a lot of that on walking surfaces and the wear on that.
Well, that's one of the things they're doing going forward, is so we don't lose these things, is to maintain them like we lost the ambassador. So they're looking at building in maintenance options to everything they try to do.
Yeah.
So I will make sure that they are aware that maintenance is an issue.
Sure, they also the thermoplastic stuff, like for the
we can do thermal. It's more durable, but you got to have, you know, that's a template on the thermoplastic. I mean, it's just a different.
It's not like decking.
Literally like a sticker. You throw
it's like a heavy
melted it.
Yeah, it's kind of more of a melted application onto the asphalt or concrete versus paint.
Most of the handicap. Are that way now. You can see they're a little raised.
They're raised just a little bit.
They
last longer, they're more durable. But it's a different technology, and you have to have custom templates for that.
Right. And I don't know if the artists are doing that either, so. But maybe it could be contracted out. So I'll run it by them.
We have a piece, our public works has a piece of equipment, a thermoplastic.
Oh, they can make it,
applicator. But they typically, it's my understanding, they purchased the template.
That was my thing, so.
Is that what you needed?
Is that what I needed? Yeah. They'll be happy.
Can I ask one new business thing?
8th Street and Nye Beach by Grocery Outlet, when they have, you know, the ball field that's there, mm-hmm. when they have games, they park on the 8th Street. So when people try to turn to go to Grocery Outlet or to cross 101, it gets really narrow. And I've seen almost a couple accidents there. So I don't know if maybe we need to have maybe no parking there because it slopes. And the cars then park halfway into the street. It's just something that the neighborhood has kind of noticed. And I understand they want to watch the game, but there is parking by the fire department. But it's becoming pretty dangerous because the way they come from Nye Beach, you can't really see the way the corner is. And if somebody's parked or a big truck and somebody's coming this way, there's almost been a couple of collisions there. So I don't know what the rules are. Any other comments up there?
Still awake.
Okay, I guess we're adjourned. Thanks, Derek.
Yes, you got it.
And you, everyone, for preparing all these materials.